Got Money, Money Mad and Out of Time. Listen to Ron and Elizabeth on Got Money as they take money to task.
Hashtag Got Money on Joy 94.9 and KC Radio 97.7.
Welcome to Hashtag Got Money. This is your host, Ron Malhotra, and we've got Elizabeth Jackson in the studio this morning as well.
Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Very well, thank you. This morning we have a guest, Gary Stone from Stone Wealth Systems.
Share Wealth,
I beg your pardon. Share Wealth Systems. You're an investment expert, and you have written a book called Blueprint to Wealth. Welcome. Mm-hmm. We've actually... up until now, Elizabeth, we've had most of the people that we've had on the show that talk about investing have primarily spoken about property. So it's actually nice to have somebody that will talk about the markets. So welcome. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me on, Ron and Elizabeth.
You're welcome. Mm. Nice to see you. Yeah. Love the South African accent.
Oh, thank you. We'll see how we go with that.
It's a really interesting topic. I mean, in the Australian psyche, culturally, most people are more comfortable with property as an investment vehicle. When we talk about wealth creation, we say that foremost, it's really important to define your objectives and then get the strategy right, and then you go and pick the investments. Despite the merits associated with with share market investing, a lot of people are really uncomfortable with share markets. I mean, if you look at, I heard one statistic that said there's only 3% of people actively invest in the share market. So you're a specialist, and you help people make better decisions when they're investing in the financial markets. Yeah?
Correct.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you started.
Okay. Well, going back to the late 1980s, I was a salesperson and did very well and had some spare cash to invest. And I've since found out at the time that I was probably more left-brained than right-brained and analyzed the situation to death and came up with the main categories that are open to individual investors being cash in the bank, term deposits, and property, and the stock market. So it's obvious that for the long-term investing caper, cash ain't going to cut it. So I ended up doing both property and the stock market. And the analytical side of the stock market really, the bug bit, it captured me. And I went down the path of studying fundamental analysis, technical analysis, which is charting, and most people don't know what that is, reading annual reports, balance sheets, profit and loss statements, etc., etc. Didn't do very well for probably the first 4 or 5 years in the stock market, but the property was just ambling along in the background. And that time, in fact, and I bought property for the first time in 1989, and that was right at the peak. And then it went sideways for about 6 or 7 years. And then I bought some more in 1996, which in hindsight was great timing. And then some more in 1998 and 1999. And that was, that bull market still going effectively in property. But the stock market initially was up and down. And all the reasons that people stay away from the stock market all came to the fore. It's the short-term volatility of the stock market that really plays havoc with people's minds. And I then started down a path of, through reading tens and tens of books at the time. There weren't that many available, but they were coming out thick and fast probably in the early 90s. And got onto the idea that you had to remove emotion and stop knee-jerk reacting to the volatility of the stock market. You had to develop a degree of objectivity that was probably at a higher level than the objectivity levels that we require just in our day-to-day lives, and went down that path. So I started playing around with charting and technical analysis, which is effectively, you're getting data that comes out on certainly on minute by minute and tick by tick and 5 minute by 5 minute, but certainly daily and weekly data that comes through every day. Fundamental analysis, while I was still on the path and I was using it, it's more delayed. So you're getting 6 monthly profit and loss statements in America, quarterly, but certainly in Australia, and everything's delayed, and hence the reactions to that are delayed as well. So I ended up going down the path of using charting technical analysis and price movement in the stock market to start timing it, and I developed what is called a mechanical investing system for my own use. I started using that. The company started in the period of me doing that. In 1995, I started the business, Sharewell Systems. A couple of years later, I was invited to partake in a 12-month investing contest in the old Personal Investor magazine, which has now merged and become Smart Investor magazine. And it was a 12-month long contest with three other people and a journalist. And I ended up winning that contest using my mechanical investing system.
Which you had come up with, which is a combination of the techniques that you had studied.
Correct, yep. Correct.
Yeah, and this is the thing. So as you speak here, for the average person, a lot of what you say, which is obviously quite simple to you, may represent some complexity to the average person. And that's why one of the reasons why a lot of people stay away from the stock market is because they perceive complexity of the market. And you mentioned volatility. Now, let's talk about volatility. Now, volatility is simply the fact that markets go up and markets come down. And it's something that's also associated with the property market, except that it's not as visible.
Correct.
As it is with the share market. And that's what causes the jitters.
Absolutely.
Would you agree that there is a fundamental difference between investing in the markets versus speculating in the markets?
Oh, massive difference. Massive difference.
What is that difference, and how do you make the distinction?
It's time frame. So the term I use is time frame, and some people get that term and others don't, but the market is moving up and down in multiple time frames all the time. So in the shortest time frame is what they call tick data. So every time there's a buy or a sell on the stock market, that gets recorded and you can plot that. Then you can take those ticks and you can aggregate them into 1 minute, 5 minute, and so it goes on. But you can also look at monthly price movement, and that's really long term. So these time frames aren't at any given time all moving in the same direction. So depending on, and that's what makes a market. So people will have opinions on where the market's going to go in the next 5 minutes, the next 5 hours, the next 5 days, in the next 5 months, and the next 5 years. And those opinions all come together in this giant melting pot of human decision making, and it depends on what your requirements are that really determines how you should look at the market and how you should invest in it. So people who speculate are, you know, you hear foreign exchange trading has come to the fore with, you know, massive leverage and the numbers of that, whilst it's they're the biggest advertisers and people are aware that it's happening, there's still, it's a very small number of people that do it relative to the number of investors in the market. So the idea of speculation is what gets propagated out there in movies, and it's the romantic part of the market.
And there's so much noise in the market.
Massive noise.
And I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people shy away from the market. So what you do or what you're endorsing, is that an investment strategy?
It is. Now, I endorse both, but the book is about investing. So it's long-term investing, even what I call multi-decade investing is the problem. Everybody who invests for superannuation is an investor. They don't they might not recognize or acknowledge they're an investor, but they actually are one. And so what I'm trying to do is get people to become investment-minded and to take an interest in, you know, 40, if they're in their 20s, 30s, whatever the age group is, 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, that they have a responsibility to themselves and their families to actually become an engaged investor rather than a disengaged investor.
Yeah, to become involved.
And become involved.
I think too many people are disengaged. I mean, you're right, you correctly pointed out that so many people have exposure to the market through their superannuation and retirement savings. And it absolutely pays to take interest. Would you say that there's a fine line between being interested and being too actively involved with your investments? And can that actually be a detriment to your financial success?
It can. So we talk about a core satellite investing approach where you should give the maximum effort, if you like, or research into how you invest your core. And that is, you know, your long-term retirement investing, your big ticket items, if you like. And by definition, that would be the majority of your money. But if people want to speculate, you know, they might just have an interest. They might think they're good at it. They might just have an analytical brain like myself and many others, left-minded brain. And they just want to do it. They want to learn it. They want to become better at it. Do that, but don't do it with the whole lot. Do it with a small amount of money, and that could become a satellite strategy. See how you go with just, you know, and it should be, in my view, no more than 5%. Of your total money that you want to invest in your investments, and maybe less depending on how much you have, because there is an absolute dollar probably amount you should start with. And then you can grow that if you become good at it, but ensure that you don't go and, you know, put the house on something that you don't know too much about.
Yeah, and I like that because, you know, whilst there may be some opportunities for people to get above average returns or above market returns, there's a risk that comes with that as well by frequently trading markets or watching markets. So I like the fact that you've considered that the bulk of a person's savings should remain invested in passive. Passive meaning buy and hold, and please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So buy and hold, so buy good quality assets or good quality businesses and hold on to them, but have maybe a small percentage of your savings that you're effectively using to outperform the markets by taking advantage of the opportunities that are available in the market, because the markets aren't as efficient as people would like to think.
They are. They're definitely not. I mean, the academics tell us
they
are.
In the short term,
they're not. In the long term, they are. You know, the markets, the indices of the stock markets are rigged to go up, and we can talk about that in a moment. And then we should take advantage of the fact that they're rigged to go up. We can talk about that in a moment.
But despite that, you do place a restriction for the people that you advise or you help by saying that, hey, despite the fact that there is opportunities in the market that you can take advantage of, we still want you to minimize your exposure.
Correct.
By still having bulk of your savings Correct. Invested.
And there's another category of people who get absolutely, you know, just they go down this path of trading the market, the speculative side of it, in different kinds of instruments like, you know, contracts for difference, which we can explain in a moment if we want to, but the people who are listening who understand that would know it, and foreign exchange and that. And then the bulk of their core is sitting in a very poor long-term performing asset class like cash. And I say, hang on, what are you doing? You're getting such poor returns on your large amount of money and your small amount of money that you surely you might be gaining skills, but you are putting all your effort and time into speculating in the market when the majority of your money is sitting in cash getting really poor long-term returns. So it's those categories of people too that you want to say, hold on, sweat the big stuff first. Have a look at your core portfolio and try and get that right to your risk profile, and then bother about speculating. So get it in the right order.
Yep. And I always say to people that your investment decisions should be based on your objectives. So, you know, and that's why, you know, if you're somebody that is going to have a significant gap between where you are and where you need to be, then of course, as you said, if having too much exposure to cash-based investments, even though the perceived risk might be less, but the real risk is very high because you're not keeping up with the cost of living.
Absolutely. And they don't realize it's actually a higher risk asset class.
Interesting conversation we're having. So, Gary, as an investment specialist and somebody that has had a bit of success in the financial markets, you emphasize objectives. You always say that your investment decisions, like us as advisors, we say to clients that your investment decisions should correspond with your objectives. And it's something that you agree with, I have to say that's unique, because a lot of investment specialists tend to be really focused on what they're doing. And sometimes they don't give regard to the person and their real objectives. Mm. But it appears that you have a different approach. So take us through it.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, in fact, the disclaimer that just listened to on the radio is all about not all this is advice, but not particular to your investment objectives. And so what I try to get people to do, and it's amazing how few people do this, even after you explain all the benefits for it, is to actually write an investment plan. And that investment plan should be consistent with a life plan, which very few people actually write. But let's stick to the investment plan for the time being. And that the very first thing you do is, like a business plan, is you state what your mission statement is, what you're trying to achieve with why are you investing? What's your purpose for it? You know, most people end up with the largest chunk of money being invested as their superannuation. And the reason it's there is because they have to put it there. And where is it being invested? What are they trying to achieve with it? Well, somebody put an A4 form in front of them and they had a bunch of boxes on it, and they decided to tick the one that said balance because, hey, that's what everybody does. And so I'll just go down that path. And then 40 years later, they get there and they say, oh, I haven't got enough.
Yeah.
And they wonder why.
And here's the thing, is that what you just said is not even exaggeration. That actually happens with vast majority of people. That's exactly what happens. They just very, very passively just take an option.
It's the biggest mistake they'll make, because, you know, it's that the potential, and we can hopefully get to talk about this at some stage, is that's going to cost them, and I can prove it to them through numbers and everything, it's going to cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars, and potentially, if in your 20s, millions, you know, well over a million. I've done this exercise with my daughter, and anyway, we can talk about that another time. But so the objective... So the objectives should come out starting in an investment plan. The first chapter are is your mission statement. What's your purpose? And that purpose is important, because the markets, whether it's or any investing avenue, is going to challenge you at some stage. And it's that purpose that keeps you going on this investing gig. Second thing is then to state your financial objectives and your goals. What do you want to achieve? And set a 12-month goal, a 3, 5, 10, and even a 30-year and a 40-year goal, and for people in their 20s, a 60-year goal. I mean, they're going to be around.
Correct.
In the 80s, and probably by the time they get there in their 100s, so maybe it should even be an 80-year goal. And this is where you start getting what I put a lot of emphasis into when you just do that, a big picture perspective of what your investing career, your investing lifetime is going to be. And that's what that's when you start realizing that small percentage gains or what I call compounded annual returns, just a 0.5% or 1% more per annum over a very long time, is a massive amount of money down the track. And then you'd actually say, once you've stated your objectives, you say, well, how am I going to do that? So now you start getting into, is it property? Is it the stock market? Is it both? Is it bonds? And you start looking at investing instruments and avenues and asset classes. And then once you decide that, you'd actually say, well, what is my process? And define a process and then state what that process is. And that's an investment plan. Pretty much anybody's done a business plan or been involved with a business plan, it's not that different.
Yep. I wholeheartedly agree with you, because in the absence of a purpose, what is the basis of your decisions? It's hearsay. It's what the media are saying. It's the tips that your friends and family are giving you. It's what the taxi driver is saying. Yeah. And so I think it's so important that you have your investment selection be subservient to your overall purpose and objectives.
Absolutely.
Rather than just going and randomly buying investments and having no regard to your objectives. So I really like the way, because that's exactly the same philosophy that we bring to the table. And I'm in complete agreement with you. So why is it that from a behavioral perspective, I mean, you're saying that a 20-year-old potentially if they don't get involved with their investment decisions, can potentially be worse off by $1 million in the next 30, 40 years that they're invested.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not rocket science. I mean, people have heard about this. What is the reason for people's indifference and apathy towards their own finances?
Well, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything.
Oh, I like that.
And if you don't do your purpose, you're not going to know what you stand for with respect to investing. So the first person that comes along and says, hey, yeah, you can make $1 squillion by trading foreign exchange, you've got no ambit of perspective against which to evaluate that. So you just go down that path. If somebody's got some education and they actually start understanding the big picture, they've done an investment plan, they'll look there and they'll say, right, if I can get an extra 2% compounded per annum for the next 40 years, and I'm putting in just whatever, $9,000, or it might start off $3,000 or $4,000 a year, and it builds up as your salary increases with CPR to $9,000, $10,000, $12,000 a year over a lifetime, it just takes probably an hour spreadsheeting to work out, as I've done for my daughter who's 28, to work out that she will be $1.6 million better off when she retires at 67, if the saying is probably going to be later than that by the time she gets there, purely by getting an extra 2.5% compounded per annum by investing it in a stock market index through an index ETF, than getting the median return of super funds.
So since you're mentioning ETFs, I mean, just because we always try and demystify some of this common jargon that exists in the finance world. And so ETF is just it's an exchange-traded fund. But I'll get you to explain what is the difference between an ETF, a share, and a managed fund.
Okay. ETFs are what we'll hopefully talk about quite a bit. But an ETF is basically, it tracks the index of the stock market. So there are a number of ETFs, and you're going to, there's more and more coming onto the stock market, and there's some that are masquerading as an index ETF, but they're not. So we'll define those later. But at the real basic level, if you look at, there's an index in Australia called the ASX 20 index, and there are others, ASX 50, 100, 200, 300. But the ASX 20 will always be in the 20 largest stocks by market capitalization, whatever they are now and whatever they'll be in 10, 20, 30, 40 years' time. So by being in that index, if a ASX 20, one of the 20 stocks, starts performing poorly from a financial, it starts making losses, et cetera, and its share price starts going down, it will fall out of that index automatically, and it'll be replaced with another one that's rising. So you'll always be in the top 20 by market capitalization listed companies. There might be some bigger ones that are not listed. And that has the effect of actually tracking the index. Now, an exchange-traded fund just mimics that index. So it's the ASX 20 index. In the past, you weren't able to actually invest in an index. You had to go and pick individual stocks. And that got people into stock selection. The moment you get into stock selection, well, then you could pick a few bad ones as well.
Yeah. And so specialist companies will provide you with the ability to actually invest in a diversified stock portfolio that represents a particular index. And you just have to make one purchase, but you've got diversity through an ETF.
Correct, in the stock market, yeah.
Yep, yeah. So it's a fantastic... So that's one way. And so how does that differ from buying... So individual share, if you're buying an individual share, then the problem is you're too concentrated. That's one issue. Yeah. Is there any other issues in buying direct shares?
Yeah, there is. You could pick one that goes to zero, like Babcock & Brown, HIH Insurance, ABC Learning.
OneTel.
There's plenty of them, right? Or you could pick some that go down and stay down for many, many years. So the idea of now you don't have to do stock selection. So you don't need to learn fundamental analysis, technical analysis. You don't need to have a stockbroker. You just effectively become a passive index investor for that portion of money that you want to apportion to the stock market. Which is the larger portion of your money. So that's the passive.
And that's what, just going back to what you had said earlier about the core satellite approach, which you explained, core of the money should be in passive investments. And the satellites are basically investments which are perhaps making an attempt to outperform the market, so there's slightly high risk. But again, what you're emphasizing is the fact that bulk of your savings should be in a core portfolio.
Correct.
Which is made up of passive investments, which is an ETF is an example of a passive investment.
Correct.
And the active side or the satellite investments would be investments that you're exposed to the techniques that you mentioned earlier.
If you want to. But so the core could be, and in the book Blueprint to Wealth, I describe the core portfolio. You could have 100% sitting in a single ETF if you want to, because it's got the liquidity of all those stocks. Or you could break it down between two and three indices, exchange-traded funds, and have anything it has to be greater than 50% by definition to be your core. So anything between 50 and 100% sitting in those exchange-traded funds. And the research shows us that that's going to beat every super-managed fund over the long term. And we're talking, if you're talking about this being a 20, 30, 40-year investment, there's a very high probability you're going to do better than all of them.
Thank you for joining us this morning. You guys worked really well together. We would definitely like you back
to join
us again. Thank you. It's been so valuable. Ron, thank you for running that interview.
No, I think I'm really impressed with Gary, and I think there's so much value that Gary can offer, which is why I think we need to have a continuation of the show where we get Gary to come back in and go into the specifics. But today was really about providing context around the markets, because we know that vast majority of Australians are not comfortable investing in the markets. So thank you so much, Gary.
It's a pleasure.
You're listening to #GotMoney on Joy 94.9. And KC Radio.